Welcome back to the Roundtable's live broadcast from the press room at SPAC, the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, where we're broadcasting just steps away from the stage that the Philadelphia Orchestra and the New York City Ballet call their summer home. I'm Joe Donahue.
And I'm Alan Shartok. We are backstage, actually lurking over stage left of this grand performance place at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, and we hope you'll stay tuned for our three-hour tour of this magical musical masterpiece that's alliteration.
I love alliteration.
Brilliant. Yes.
Yes. We kick off this morning's broadcast with violinist David Kim. David has been the concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra since 1999. He started playing the violin at the age of three, began studies with the famed Dorothy DeLay, and that was just at the age of eight. And then he later received his bachelor's and master's degree from the Juilliard School.
He'll be giving his pre-performance talk tonight at 7 p.m. before the 8 p.m. opening with Bernadette Peters.
We welcome David Kim back to the Roundtable. It's always wonderful to see you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, totally my pleasure.
First of all, welcome back to Saratoga. Is it when you look at the calendar a year in advance, you look at this fondly?
Oh, of course. This is a home away from home for us. I mean, and I don't say that exaggerating one bit. I mean, the orchestra's been here for, what, over 50 years?
Right.
And this is my 16th summer here, and so, you know, all of us have raised our kids here. Our kids have learned to swim here. We
play the horses. Sure.
Oh, we play the horses. We know the good places to get baked goods, and you know, just it's a very special time for us because it's not just 3 or 4 days; it's 3 weeks. So we really kind of move in for almost a month.
And you don't really do that anywhere else, do you?
No. And it's a point of kind of envy with many other orchestras. I know a lot of my friends in the other Big Five orchestras wish they had some kind of wonderful residency like we do here. The acoustics are, in my opinion, the best for an outdoor amphitheater in the world.
Speaking of acoustics, how are the acoustics in your headphones? Can you hear us? Are you okay?
Actually, it could go up a little.
Okay,
bit.
I saw you.
perfect.
I obviously know your sound. I just wanted to make sure you could hear yourself. Okay, good. So the acoustics here, you enjoy, and you love. I assume it's fun playing outside.
Yes, I mean it's refreshing to play here. It's cool at night. It's you know, it's a gigantic amphitheater, and yet I can look out every summer and see people, friends that I recognize right away. So it really is something that we all very much look forward to, and we all bump into each other at the rest stops and the truck stops on the way up here on Tuesday before SPAC. Many of us rent the same homes every summer and have for decades, and so it really is a home away from home.
Mark Volpe was telling us at Tanglewood that everybody got in the early days, everybody got a stipend, and they wouldn't want to spend their stipend, so they would bring pup tents out with them, and they would stay in the pup tent. But I take it the place takes care of you guys.
Yes, we stay at graduate housing on the campus of Skidmore.
Right.
And it's very nice. And we all room together. Every night somebody's cooking a dinner for somebody else. And after the concerts, it's a kind of a celebratory feeling. Everybody's celebrating each concert. I guess that's why musicians are kind of overweight.
You are not overweight.
Every night we're celebrating. We're eating and drinking and just
well, you're lucky.
Enjoying each other and enjoying the place.
So is there a lot of? I'm a political scientist, but is there a lot of power in being the concert master?
Well, I would say on a subtle level, yes, there is. And my big mistake when I first came to the orchestra was thinking that it was a tangible power. That it was something that I could do verbally or by browbeating or glaring at somebody across the stage. I was very foolish and stupid. And what I've come to realize is the best use of power is to share it. So meaning to include your colleagues in what you're doing and seek their advice and seek their wisdom. And that creates much more of a kind of a useful power.
But, well, you know, I've always wondered about the concertmaster, who, of course, is very important, and the relationship between the concertmaster and the oboe player who gives the original A to tune up the orchestra. Is there ever any trouble between the two of you?
No, I mean, many times people consider the principal oboe the kind of the concertmaster of the wind section.
I see.
But really, our only interaction is, besides musical, during the works of art that we play, is just when I stand up and I look at him and he gives the A. But let me just explain what I mean by power. Power over, not necessarily like a political power,
right,
or interpersonal power, but more a musical kind of force is what I'm talking about. And I would like to think that even peripherally, my colleagues, they're of course watching the conductor keenly through as much of the music as they possibly can. But there is also this kind of unspoken leadership kind of vibe quality that comes from the concertmaster. And so people look at the conductor, but then they all peripherally have a feeling of the sound production, of the surge, the ebb and flow of the music through the concertmaster, mm-hmm, out of the corner of their eye.
Is the your role primarily then on stage, or in the creation of the programming, do you have a say in that as well?
I do not. There's an entire arm of our administrative, right, staff who is in charge of that, and it's really a Rubik's Cube of trying to figure out, okay, well, we did the Brahms Third, you know, 5 years ago, and then it's on tap for 2 years from now, and then somebody wants to do Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. Well, we did that last year, or Midori is going to come and do that next year. You know, it's just,
right,
a constant kind of juggling act, and I don't know how they do it, but somehow they do it and create an incredible variety of a menu for our audiences.
Now, how healthy is the Philadelphia financially right now? I know there were problems before, but how are you doing?
Oh, doing great. You know, that doesn't mean that we can't use everybody's help. I mean, you know what? When the orchestra travels to Europe, everything is government subsidized. Everything, there's very much government support, but here everything is private, and we have to raise every dollar. And so it's a big deal to tour a big orchestra like this, to have a big orchestra move to a different region and to perform. And so, you know, we are constantly fundraising. I'm very much involved with fundraising.
They make the orchestra. I don't want to say they make you, but the members of the orchestra are expected to pitch in fundraising.
Oh, absolutely, and we want to, because
yes,
we have a vested interest.
Sure.
It is our life, and it's not just a personal interest in our own kind of bottom line or bank account. It really is trying to be good stewards of the institution while we occupy our chairs. You know, at some point we all step off the train, but the train just keeps going. And so we want to be very, very responsible and good stewards of the great traditions of this orchestra.
So what kind of instrument do you play?
I play a J.B. Guadagnini made in 1757,
wow,
in Milan, Italy.
Do you ever think about what's going on in 1757 when you hold that instrument?
I do. Yeah. And also all the years in between.
Yeah. You can channel that.
Yeah, that violin spent some time in Paris in the Orchestra de Paris. You know, it's a real trip through history to play these great instruments, and they're actually, this orchestra owns this J.B. Guadagnini.
Oh, I see.
And so I'm fortunate enough to use it while I'm in the orchestra.
And you never left it in the back seat of a taxi cab?
No. Okay. No, I'm very careful with it.
Good answer. we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. We'll continue our conversation with Concertmaster David Kim, and we'll talk a little bit about the pre-performance talk that he will be giving tonight, which is the opening night of the Philadelphia Orchestra at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center with Bernadette Peters. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable's live broadcast from SPAC, the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. Opening night of the Philadelphia Orchestra is tonight, and violinist and concertmaster of the Philadelphia Orchestra, David Kim, joins us. And as I mentioned just before the break, David will be giving the pre-performance talk tonight at 7 o'clock before the 8 o'clock opening, which will feature Bernadette Peters. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of pre-performance talks.
Well, I really enjoy doing it. As you can tell, I don't mind talking a little bit in public, but I've done it many, many times here at SPAC, and I consider it not so much an opportunity to quote-unquote educate the audience. This is a very sophisticated audience here. They know their music. They love it. They love their orchestra. But I consider it a chance for folks to get kind of a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on with the Great Philadelphia Orchestra. I always share some funny, sometimes slightly off-color anecdotes about some of our soloists, our conductors. I have an incredible opportunity to be up close and personal with many of these people.
So without costing us $350,000 per word, per utterance for 28 radio stations putting us out of business, could you give us a hint of what, you know, an off-color story might be?
Yeah. Well, I know that on Wednesday, next week, Emmanuel Ax, the great, great pianist, is one of the great pianists on the planet.
And one of the great human beings on the planet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just a real mensch. He's playing with us next Wednesday, the Beethoven Piano Concerto No. 3.
Yeah.
And I remember once I went up to him after he played at some concerto with us, and I said, Manny, it was just sublime.
In the control room, get ready to hit
the
dumbbells.
Thank you so much. And then he looked at me and he said, and I'll change the vocabulary just a little. Yeah. He was like, I'm just glad I didn't mess it up.
Oh, mess it up. That's what he is. He's a very humble and great man. He really is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there are lots of funny stories, little anecdotes like that. Musicians are, especially these great soloists, are a truly unique breed of animal. And I remember a couple of years ago, I'll give you another one that I've shared with our pre-concert folks. A couple of years ago, I was having a little bit of arm, shoulder issues, little problems, a little pain. And right before Yo-Yo Ma was going to go on stage and play Elgar Cello Concerto, stupidly, selfishly, I said, oh, Yo-Yo, I heard that you do these kind of pre-concert stretches, and maybe someday you could show me. And literally, 10 seconds before he got on his hands and knees, you know, it's kind of dusty, the floor, and he had his concert clothes on, he got on his hands and knees and showed me all these different stretches. Meanwhile, they're saying, Mr. Ma, please, let's go. It's time to play.
And get off the floor, it's time to play.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of guy he is. Oh, just so generous of soul, you know, just a wonderful guy.
Do they ask questions? Do you have a Q&A during the talk?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what kind of questions does the audience tend to ask?
Well, you know, as I said, they're a very sophisticated audience, so they ask questions like, well, when you're thinking of the Great Philadelphia Sound, what are some of the specific things you do with the bow to create this kind of rich, luscious sound? Which makes me scratch my head because I'm not sure all the time. But yeah, we do that. We always do a Q&A. And,
have you ever had a rude question?
No. And I recognize folks from year to year. And it's kind of a special, unique part of performing at SPAC is to walk up to the Hall of Springs into that beautiful, intimate little room there and just sit down in a comfy chair. And it just feels like SPAC has begun when I do my pre-concerts.
When you look at the season as a whole, what are you looking forward to? What do you think the standouts are?
Well, you know, we do quite a few summer residencies, much smaller or shorter than this. But
yes.
I would have to say that year after year, what I am most impressed with, excited about, are the lineup of soloists. It is unbelievable, the soloists they bring here. You know, every one of them is a headliner. You know, Yo-Yo and Emmanuel Ax and David Kim. I'm sorry, I meant Bernadette Peters. You know, there's an incredible lineup of soloists. And in my opinion, no matter how great the programming is otherwise, if you don't have a fantastic soloist there with a really an exciting solo concerto, I find that the concert, it just is a little bit less stimulating. It perhaps brings a couple of less people into the hall. I think that you have to have that combination of great repertoire, like Prokofiev, scenes from Romeo and Juliet, and then you also have to have a wonderful soloist. Bernadette Peters, Emmanuel Ax, Joshua Bell. You know, it's just a and so when you look at the program, it just it's pretty mind-blowing the level of soloists here.
And the soloist relationship with the conductor, that's always something that's interested me, because obviously these people get a lot of money, go from place to place, you know, sort of paladin-like. And each of the conductors has a different style. So how do they reconcile all that?
Well, each conductor has their kind of favorite soloists. That's one aspect. So many times a new conductor will come into town and be the music director of a given orchestra, and they will bring their own kind of stable of soloists. And then, say, after 15 years, they move on to another orchestra or they retire. Some of those soloists will be saying to themselves, well, guess I won't be coming back to San Francisco for a while anymore because it's somebody else, and they're going to bring their favorite soloist.
And is that actually true? Is that what happens?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because the conductors get to choose which soloists. But then again, there's also the aspect of putting butts in the seats. And so...
like, nobody's going to turn down a Yo-Yo Ma,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. If the chemistry is not perfect. But I would say 99% of the time, the relationship between soloist and conductor is very, very professional, cordial, warm. Because it better be. Because both of their livelihoods depend on it. And that chemistry, if there is a lack of it, shows up into the concert hall. So everybody understands the way the way it works in this business.
So are there groupies who assemble at the
stage door?
Yeah, I was there at Tanglewood one night when Josh Bell was there, and boy, there was quite a crowd out there.
Yeah, you know, I find that happens very much in Japan. Usually the soloist is busy signing autographs or the conductor signing autographs late into the night, and then they come out, and then there's all of a sudden this kind of group. And then in the States, I find it happens a little bit less, but it does happen here at SPAC. I find, and it's mostly young people, which is so encouraging to see high schoolers and middle schoolers with their program and a Sharpie waiting for an autograph. It's so old-fashioned, and yet it is really encouraging and speaks well to the cultural life of this area, what it has to offer, and to the future of classical music in the Adirondacks.
David Kim is the concertmaster for the Philadelphia Orchestra. He'll be giving the pre-performance talk tonight for the opener here at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. For more information on SPAC and the Philadelphia Orchestra, go to SPAC.org. David Kim, it's always a great pleasure to have you on our program. We appreciate all your wonderful work and for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Delight to see you. Thank you. You're listening to the Roundtable's live broadcast from SPAC on WAMC.